Alrighty, Shabbat Shalom to all that are here, and Shabbat Shalom to everybody who will be with us and watching us in this almost live broadcast from Israel. And it's a blessing to be here. We would like to start doing this more often if possible, maybe once a month, that we can have our brethren around the world at least spend a little bit of time with us here and get live updates. I had originally planned on giving one message today, and I felt very inspired at the last minute to change it because of some of the things going on in the world. And before I start into the message that I'm going to talk quite a bit today about Babylon and money and some of the things that are going on, I really think that world events are moving ahead so quickly that sometimes we don't even grasp how fast prophecy is being fulfilled before our eyes. But I pretty much on at least a weekly basis, sometimes on a daily basis, will get articles and things that are sent to me about things going on. This one says, silent famine sweeps the globe. And there is a food famine and food shortages that are coming to the world. Soaring food prices lead to riots. Other articles on the financial crisis in the world, what's going on right now. This one says, will the trade deficit trigger the depression? Another great depression. And we know the trade deficit's there. We know the things going on with Iran right now, how serious the situation is with them. Just this week, they've raised their uranium level to 20%, and they're doing more that it looks like. And I believe they probably have the capability already for a bomb, but these things are coming. Beside that, we have earthquakes. Haiti would just happen, unprecedented. Hundreds of thousands of people dying, war, disease, famine, nuclear proliferation, and many, many other world problems that are mounting. And you know, it's interesting, there's a scripture in Ecclesiastes 10:19. It says, bread is made for laughter, and wine gladdens life, but money answers all things. And a lot of these problems, especially when you're talking about food in third world countries, money can solve these problems. You know, if there was enough money that was being distributed, instead of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, some of these things could be solved. And at least if there were world problems like an earthquake or something like we're seeing in Haiti, they could come to the aid very quickly and rebuild. But it's just a little amazing to see, hundreds of thousands of people living in plastic tents when supposedly billions of dollars are coming in there. So it's hard to figure it out. So money can answer all the things. So when the key to everything is, if you have a financial meltdown in the world, which Babylon is all about money, you are going to have a problem in this world that's unprecedented. Because we're living in a different world now. It's not like it was 100 years ago where we were a agricultural society and most people grew their own food and they had goats and they had this. Today, it's a totally 100% different world of what we had back then. So I have several messages on Babylon. I'm not going to belinger the point today. I think anybody who's probably watching this knows that we believe that America fits end time Babylon. There are more than 100 characteristics in scriptures that define who end time Babylon is, and America fits every one of them. Just to name a few here before we start, one of the characteristics of Babylon is she's the number one military in the world. So when you look at that today, who is the number one military power in the world? Without a doubt, at least right now, it's America. Babylon is also the world policeman. Jeremiah 50 and verse 23. You know, who else is the world policeman today? Who else is going into other nations? And whether we start with Afghanistan and Kosovo and Iraq and all these other places, nobody else but America. Jeremiah 51:44 and Revelation 17:16, Babylon reigns over the kings of the earth, and all the nations assemble in Babylon. New York City, United Nations, where all the nations come together, and they assemble there together. And more than anything, though, when you talk about Babylon, the one word that comes into play is money. You know, two things, pleasure-seeking that comes from the money and the money itself. So Babylon is world-renowned, and we're going to go over a few of these scriptures, for her prideful attitude and pleasure-seeking hearts, and also, you know, that she is the steam engine of the world economy. We'll read in a little while Revelation 18 that actually names 25 characteristics or things that Babylon trades more than anybody in the world, and only in America do they have a commodity exchange to trade all those things. We do have some commodity exchanges of gold and silver and some of these other things, but America is the world commodity market in Chicago where they do most of these things. Another very, very important characteristic of end time Babylon talks about in Jeremiah 50, verse 4 and 5, and 17 and 20, is that in the end time there's more Jews and Israelites living in Babylon than anywhere else on earth. And the people are coming, the Jews, so Brother Judah and Ephraim from Babylon back to the Holy Land in the end time. So again, this would throw out Catholic Church, Vatican, ancient Iraq, where there's probably less than 100 Jews living there today, probably no Israelites, and just really bring in on who Babylon is. But again, it's not my point today to prove that. We have other messages online. Who is Babylon? Babylon Revisited. Maybe somewhere in the future, I'll do another message on Babylon. I haven't done one in probably, at least probably 3, 4, 5 years now. But today, I really want to talk more about Babylon and the financial system there. I would guess, just my guess is that probably 75% of the people that will watch this video are from the United States, or in that area over there, United States or Canada or somewhere in the area there. And about 2 weeks ago, America, they just had, the president gives every year, in the last week of January, what's called the State of the Union Address. And if you listen to the State of the Union Address by the new president who's been there almost a year now, Barack Obama, he basically has made it sound like all the troubles that we had a year ago are over and everything is moving ahead and everything is well and fine, which I think the reality of it is extremely different. As a matter of fact, I was extremely worried 1 year ago about the financial situation in Babylon and the world, because as Babylon goes financially, so does the world. But I'm probably 100 times more distressed today than I was back then. Matter of fact, you know, there's a scripture in Ezekiel 9 that talks about those who sigh and cry for the abominations done in the earth. And I don't think there's ever been a time in my calling where I've prayed more fervently for Yahweh's kingdom to come in these recent days and months. You just look around the world and so many people are suffering. And so many people are hurting. And it seems to only be getting worse. It doesn't seem to be getting better. So, you know, a year ago, we had a new president of the United States. First time ever an African American was a president. And according to the world scale, there was many messianic expectations. Matter of fact, when President Obama was running for office, a lot of the ads were showing him with halos. And he was going to meetings and women were fainting and passing out and all these things were going on. And there were a lot of things that were making it sound like, you know, wow, this man can bring world peace and, you know, a lot of messianic expectations. But a year down the line, they pretty much worn off. And at the time, I wondered to myself, because when I looked at President Obama's record, he was the most liberal Democrat in all of the Senate House. You know, he voted for a lot of things that not even someone like Ted Kennedy would have voted for. So it didn't surprise me when some of the liberal agenda was coming in there. But some of the things that happened, as we were, like I said, we're 1 year removed now from what they told us is the worst financial crisis maybe in the history of the world. And that this was even worse than the Great Depression and everything that could have happened. And the answer to this problem was to basically spend their way out of it. That was the answer. We're going to spend our way out of it. You know, that's what we're going to do. So, did it work? We're a year down the line. I want to show you some things in Scripture. I want to talk about some things here. And is what has been happening, are things really better right now? Or are we in a calm before the storm? Prophetically, in Scripture, does it tell us the time we're at? Does it tell us what we should be doing right now? And to be honest with you, you know, I wouldn't be taking the time on Yahweh's Sabbath day to do a message like this if I didn't think that this was vitally important. I think that this might be one of the most important messages I can ever give, because, you know, we're a year later than 2009, but we are very much walking down the prophetic timeline where the world is going to change as we know it today very, very shortly. So that's why I think this is really, really important. Let's just logically think here for a moment. If you personally owed $1 million, let's say you owed on whatever, you have debts, credit cards, all these things, and you owed $1 million, and you only had a net worth of $100,000. So maybe your house and your car, so what you owned was worth $100,000, and what you owed was worth $1 million. And you were behind in all your payments, and you didn't pay your rent in 3 months, and you didn't pay your car in 3 months, could you really think that just spending more money is going to solve all your problems? I mean, logically think about it, you know what I mean? Because, sorry to say, that this is the situation of millions of Americans today. Not just a couple, you know, but I mean millions of Americans. Me and Petra saw a movie not that long ago called The Pursuit of Happiness, you know, that's a true story, you know, about a man in America and how he did. And, you know, what really touched me in that movie was that this wasn't just the plight of one man in an isolated story, but millions of Americans are living that way. I mean, from what I'm being told from people, there's tent cities going up all over America, and the millions, people are losing their houses, and it's forecasted this year, 2010, that 3 to 4 more million people will lose their house just this year. Millions of people. I mean, when you think about that, that's you're talking about then children and grandchildren and parents and all kinds of life changes that are happening because of how bad the situation is. So I don't think that you can just look at a situation with our federal government and just think that, well, you know, we owe a lot of money, but we'll spend our way out of it. We'll just keep spending money until somehow something changes. Because if it doesn't work in your personal life, how on earth would that work on a federal level? It just wouldn't. But basically, the system of money, as I want to read here, I read this in another sermon before, but I think for the ones who have not heard this, it's important for me to explain to you how our system of money came into existence. Because when we look in the Bible, right, let's go to the story of Abraham. What happens? Abraham is getting ready to die, and his wife, or rather his wife had passed away first, and what did he do? He wanted a resting place for his family. So what did he do? He didn't pull out a credit card. He didn't pull out plastic money. He didn't, you know, take a loan from somewhere. No, he took out 200 pieces of silver, and he handed it over to the person, and that was the means of exchange. It was an exchange of money, of gold, of silver, of precious metals. That was basically the way it is. So how on earth did we go from a biblical standard of means of exchange, that this cup is worth something and this cup is worth something, and now if we're going to trade, we're going to trade on equal value, to going today of having a world where everything is basically has no real value to it, you know, that we're just trading in all these numbers and all these kind of things? And is it really scriptural? What does it mean to our life? Should we be partaking in this kind of system? Should we be buying on credit? You know, what does Yahweh say about this? Because the seriousness of it is, it's actually the whole system in the West is actually going against one of the commandments of not coveting, as we're going to see that here shortly. But I'd like to read here for maybe the next 10 minutes or so, and I just want to share with you, if you haven't heard this before, of how the concept of paper money started today. And of course, where did it start? Babylon, like anything else. And showing you the whole banking system, it says, as the gold or other representative wealth began to accumulate in the private coffers and under the protective custody of the high priest in the temple, the priest, and they're calling him Baal Nimrod, Rud for short, put together an interesting plan in about 2200 BC. So again, what would happen in ancient time? There were no banks, there were no international bankers, there was no International Monetary Fund or World Bank or none of these things. But where would people go when they needed to store something? To the temple. Makes sense. Because the temple was the place where no one would dare go in and steal things out of the temple. So that's where this priest in the temple came up with a very interesting idea. That he noticed that at one time, no one ever called for all the wealth. So here it is. If you had 1,000 people that were bringing you one gold bar each, you never had a situation where 999 people came and said, we want our gold bar. So because of that, he came up with a very interesting idea to become a banker. That since the wealth was stored in the temple and really wasn't gaining anything there, that he would start loaning out the wealth that was in the temple, the bars of gold, to people. And this way they can expand their business, they can do this, they can do that, whatever they were going to do with it. And by them expanding their business, what was he going to get in return? 30% interest. Pretty good, you know?
Almost like our Federal Reserve Bank today with the way they do the same thing.
So he's our first banker here, this Babylonian priest from Babylon. I'll read a little bit about here what happened here. The first farmer took the gold from Rud after pledging his property in lieu of the repayment. Okay, so he put up the property to pay back the gold. He took the gold to a local businessman contracting to have an irrigation system built and enough seed supplied to plant a crop. The businessman took the gold to the temple for safekeeping. So here it is. Rud gives the gold to the man gives it to the businessman, and the businessman brings it back to the temple. Isn't it exactly the way the system's going today? So the priest is winding up with the same gold bar that he just lent out to somebody else. This priest called Rud then offered the same chunk of gold on the same terms to another farmer who wanted a house built. The builder brought the gold to the temple for safekeeping. Rud then offered the same piece of gold to a local merchant on the same terms so he could pick up enough camels to form a caravan to Egypt. The camel dealer brought the gold bar back to the temple and deposited it in the sanctuary. Same thing. You know, I guess they call it circular economy here, right? By this time, Rud added another idea to his plan. Since the gold was very heavy and cumbersome to carry, even dangerous to transport, Rud convinced his next customer, sticking to the same terms of the loan, 30% interest, that it would be safer for all concerned if he just passed a clay tablet receipt for the amount of work that the gold represented. The clay was easier to carry, it bore the imprint of the high priest's own signet ring, and would be accepted as if it was gold by all local businessmen. So, wow, now it's even better. So if he's got 100 gold bars there, he doesn't even have to give the gold out anymore. He could write out a clay tablet that's easier to carry. And now, instead of having 100 gold bars, he could take one bar and he could lend it out 100 times the same bar. Exactly what the banks are doing today when you think about it. Because how many millions of people are putting money in the bank, and how much of your money do they have on deposit? 1%. So 99% of the money they're getting, they're out there investing and doing this and doing that. And what do you think happened to that 99% of the money in the last 3 or 4 years as everybody is losing their money in the stock market and real estate and insurance companies are going under? Where do you think all the bank's money has gone? To the same place as everybody else out in the air. So basically this was the concept, and it says to make a long story short, this priest Nimrud found that within the year he was able to lend the same bar 10 times. At the end of the year, he was still in possession of the original bar itself. In addition, he owned a farm and half interest in a caravan. Two of the debtors failed to make their payments, so not only did he get his gold back, but he also got the businesses that they started. In addition to that, he paid 80 pounds of gold by the 8 debtors who succeeded with the help of the loan, plus, of course, the 24 pounds of gold in interest. Rude's 10 pounds had gained him 104, not bad, for 1 year. Of course, the original 10-pound bar was not even his. He was just keeping it for safekeeping for the other people. Exactly the way our banking system works today. He had already learned by observation that only about 1 out of 10 of the people who had money in the temple for safekeeping ever actually requested to have their gold back at any one time. This meant he could use 9/10 of the money at any one time, any way he wanted to, because no one ever asked for it. And now that the idea of accepting clay tablets was catching on, there was no way to tell how far he could bluff his way. As long as the people had confidence, and that's the word, in the clay receipts, he could continue to amass great wealth at very little actual risk or expenditure. So now, like I said, out of that 100 gold bars, he could lend it out 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 100,000 times, because only 1% or 5% of the people are actually ever coming and asking for the gold back. And the key to everything is what? Confidence. As long as they had confidence that this guy was honest, that my money is safe there, everything is fine. What would happen tomorrow if people lost confidence in the banking system? What would happen if all of America all of a sudden decided, hey, you know what? I don't feel so safe having my money in the bank. I want to go there and get my money out. There'd be a run on the bank. There's no way. They don't even have 1% of your money there. So if everyone went to the bank, you'd have a major crisis unprecedented before in the history of our country. So that's the reason why the government, no matter what the situation is, they have to tell you everything is good. They have to. Because if they came out and panicked you, they would create a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You know, they would destroy the banks overnight. So then we see, it says, Rude began to see that he can control the entire economy. If his system began to destroy itself because people couldn't any longer sustain the exorbitant interest rate of 30%, he could postpone the ultimate day of reckoning by lowering the rate to maybe 20%. Isn't that what's happening today? Because the system is on the verge of collapsing, they've lowered rates to nothing because they can't get any money anymore because nobody has any money left. And the last part of this Ponzi scheme is not letting the people panic to actually go to the banks and get what's theirs. So they'll lower the rate. They'll give you money for nothing. They'll say don't pay for 6 months because the minute that the people start to understand that the banks are broke, and you had last year alone, I think it was close to 200 bank failures, and you barely even read it in the news, more than ever in the history of our country, in 1 year, that all those banks went under. Because again, if the confidence of the people goes out of the banking system and out from the government, there goes the system with it. Bill Nimrod realized, of course, that sooner or later the ultimate would happen, which we're seeing today. The economy would collapse. In order to pay their debts, the society as a whole would become sellers, and there would unfortunately be no buyers. They would storm the temple in angry protest when the word leaked out that the clay receipts couldn't be redeemed for gold, that they weren't worth the mud they were written on. The people would lose their confidence and their faith in the system and the clay money in the temple, but if he exercised just a little bit of caution, he could make it work during his lifetime, and that's what counted to him. History shows plainly what did happen, not just to this Nimrod system in Babylon, but to all those who follow in his footsteps. Usually the economy will collapse in 100 to 150 years. You can't sustain yourself on a dead economy. It just is impossible, as we'll see here shortly. The economy slipped from gold back to silver back to lead back money. Isn't it even interesting today? Your copper pennies aren't made out of copper anymore. Your silver nickels aren't silver nickels anymore because they're not worth what it's printed on. Whatever metal was the backing was hoarded until there was not enough available to conduct the economy. Tight money. So a cheaper, more available metal of medium exchange would be substituted until ultimate collapse, where we stand today. And this was the way it went in Babylon, Assyria, Greek, Rome. All of our money debt systems all went the same way. And we are well past midnight on this system in the USA. According to the Federal Reserve Bank, money is the confidence people have that they will be able to exchange such money for real goods and services whenever they choose to do so. You know, you don't want little green pieces of paper with dead dignitaries. That's not doing you anything. The reason why you want those papers is because you believe when you need to buy food or whatever you need with it, that you can exchange it for means. This is why money becomes a god to many people. What does it say? I have a $5 bill here. In God we trust. Who is God? The Babylonian deity of fortune. And right on the American money, Babylon money, it says, in God we trust, the Babylonian deity of fortune. So who is the confidence really in? It's in the Babylonian deity of fortune. Because this system of debt and greed and covetousness, of buying when you don't need to buy, of hoarding things when you don't need them, it's not Yahweh's system, certainly. It's the system of God. In God they trust, the Babylonian deity. This is why the words trust and fidelity are often used as part of the very names of banks. You go into banks and that's what a lot of them are called. Fidelity first. You know, first bank of trust and all these things. As long as the people you do business with agree to accept your money, it doesn't matter what it is. You could use anything. You could use paper towels. You could use, as long as the person you're bartering with agrees that that is the standard of exchange, it makes no difference. And equally important, when the people you trade with no longer have confidence in your medium of exchange, you can become a rich bankrupt. Confidence is the important key. And that's where we're at now. That for the first time in modern times, that the world is talking about not using the US dollar anymore as the reserve currency. This is not just something that is made up or something that's out there as a wild rumor on the internet. It's a fact. China, the one that holds the most dollars than anybody, has said it. And now all the financial institutions are saying within 5 years, and that's probably way, way too long, the US dollar will not be the reserve currency. What does that mean?
That means when the dollar is not the reserve currency, as scripture tells us, in 1 hour, Babylon's riches fall. That'll be it. You could have $1 million. You could have $10 million. It will be worthless. The Iraq War in 2003, when Saddam Hussein was taken overnight, when George Bush Jr. sent our troops over there, and basically they took over that country in a couple of days, do you know how devalued the Iraqi money became overnight? It went from like, what $1 would be worth, or $1,000, you know, $1 would be worth, you needed now something like 100,000 Iraqi dollars to be worth what $1 was worth before that. Zimbabwe the same way. You know, if you look at Zimbabwe, you need, they made $1 million bill now, or $5 million bill, and it cost something like $5 million to buy a loaf of bread. And I don't think that the American people realize how close you are in America, in Babylon, inside Babylon, of this happening. Because remember, when Babylon falls in one day, yes, there'll be a military takeover that's going to happen there, where the country's going to get destroyed. But Babylon, above everything, is an economic power. So where will it fall first? Economically. And then once the economic falls, the military is a natural response that's going to come from there. But it's a serious thing that I honestly believe that America is at the crossroads of this happening right now. Just going to go on a little bit more with this article, and then we'll move on from here. It says, once man introduced money, he introduced speculation. So once we went from taking, here's 5 gold pieces of silver, and I'll get this 1 gold cup, to printing this, printing paper, once they went to that, now you bring in speculation. Because before, we know that 1 piece of gold equals this. 1 piece of gold equals 1 cheer. 1 piece of gold equals 1 whatever. But now that you have paper, now that there's nothing, no intrinsic value to it, and you're just printing up all this paper, well, now there's no way of really knowing what is bartering worth. You know, that's why I can spend $5 on a gallon of milk in America, and it would take me $5 million of Zimbabwe money to get the same gallon of milk over there, because speculation comes in. If you had 10 heads of cattle, you had 10 head of cattle, and there was no way to make 10 head of cattle appear to be 100 head. You know, if you're bartering a car, I'll trade you my car for your car. You see the two cars, you know what they're both worth. There's no way of changing it. But a piece of metal was substantiated as a representation of the real wealth. A piece of metal was acknowledged as being worth so many head of cattle. Speculators can then play the market with the metal, since the decision as to how many head of cattle it was worth was arbitrary and decided by men in common agreement. Men could agree to different worth for it at one time than another. This is speculation. At each stage of the money game, you get further away from a total grasp of real wealth. It becomes more and more abstract until it reaches the highly sophisticated form of our money, which consists primarily of numbers on the ledgers of the banks that maintain our checking accounts. Although we still use some currency, worth in reality no more than the paper that it's printed on, in some points, most of the money we spend moves from buyer to seller through the checks that order the banks to debit one account on their books or to credit another. I even see people today going into stores and using a credit card for $1.38. Very few people are using paper money these days. Everything is just credit from here, credit to there. Thus, most of our money has no real value and no tangible existence. We can't see it or feel it or smell it. This is one of the reasons why quantity is so difficult to regulate. You know, all it is a statement you get every month in numbers on a piece of paper. So we find ourselves in a rather ludicrous situation. If you have any money in your pocket, please take it out and look at it. I got an American $5 bill here. Since American currency is the hinge of international financing today, let's see what it says on the American money. On the top side of the paper, you will notice that it says Federal Reserve Note. Federal Reserve Note. It also says, this note is legal tender for all debts, private and public. But what does that mean? The trick in the Federal Reserve Note is that the Federal Reserve Bank loses no cash when they pay out this currency to the member banks. Federal Reserve Notes are not redeemable in anything except what the government calls legal tender. That is money that a creditor must be willing to accept from a debtor in payment of sums owed to him. So this is not real money. This is simply a debt note. When you hand this to someone, it's like saying, I owe you $5. That's all it is. It's not real money. We stopped using money many, many years ago. But since all Federal Reserve notes are themselves declared by law to be legal money, or legal to be used for trading in a debt, they are only redeemable only in themselves. So it's not redeemable for money, it's just redeemable to themselves. To put it briefly, they are an irredeemable obligation issued by the Federal Reserve Bank. In short, the money we use every day, the money that we are all happy to accept in payment for goods, sold services, rendered in debts, incurred, is intrinsically worthless. This money, all of it, is worthless because all it is legal tender for paying debt. It has no tangible backing in the strict sense of the word. When we look back over the ground that we have covered and ask what the dollar is really based upon, we would have to say it exists essentially on promises and bookkeeping machines. So how does the Federal Reserve print these? Because in the last year alone, they printed almost 2 trillion more of these, and we're going to get into that in a minute, what that is. But how do they print them? What they do is they're printing it based on the goodwill of the American government. And the American government is doing what? They're giving treasury notes to the Federal Reserve to back up for getting these. So there's no real money or no real assets involved. It's all on good faith of the American government to pay back and the good faith of the Federal Reserve that they're making these debt notes for it. So that's why when you look at the situation today, why is it so scary? Why is it so scary? Because we have gotten into so much debt as a nation, there's no goodwill anymore. There's no good faith. And now that all the countries of the world, as prophecy says, are saying, we don't want to use the dollar anymore as our reserve currency. We need something else. Why do you think gold is going up so high? Because world banks, you know, world countries' banks, their Federal Reserve banks, they're adding to their gold reserves because they're realizing that the dollar is becoming absolutely worthless. Absolutely worthless. So when you look today, what was the answer now? So now you understand a little bit about the money, how it works, what the problem is. So now let's look at the situation. 1 year ago, if you look at the news, they told us it was the worst financial situation in the history of mankind, and their answer to it was spend your way out of it. Spend your way out of it. But like we read here, does that really work? No. What it does is it's a panic, a last-ditch panic to just try to put off the inevitable, the collapse of the system. They want you to buy credit whether you need it or not. If you look at what the American government has done in the last year is, instead of getting their debt lower and being fiscal responsible, they're telling you, buy it even if you don't need it. We're going to make $500 billion program for you to buy a house, but I don't need a house. But buy it anyway, buy it anyway. But I don't need it. But we'll give you a low interest rate. Well, okay, I'll take it. Same with cars. You know, we had the worst unbelievable situation last year with General Motors, Ford, all the car companies. But you know what? How often do you need a new car? If your car is working good, it doesn't matter that it's 10 years old, it's a good car. But so what they say, trading your car, even if it's worth nothing, we'll give you $5,000 for it in credit to buy another car. So all they're doing is promoting a covetous spirit. Because without you, and they say it all the time, the American consumer, 70% of the world economy, is based on the stupidity of people to spend even when they can't afford it. And I believe that it's not only wrong and sin, I believe it's absolutely evil. It would be like somebody being an alcoholic or a drug addict and you coming to them and like on the side and sneaking them alcohol and tempting them when you know they can't handle it. And it's the same way in America to take people that have lived in a culture of covetousness, of spending, of not being able to control what they're spending, and to almost force them by giving it all for free, although you have to pay it back somewhere down the line, I believe is absolutely evil. So, clash for clunkers, low house loans, no payments for 6 months, spend, spend, spend. That was the answer, whether you need it or not. No matter how much you owe, just keep spending, and everything's going to work out all right. But remember, this isn't Disneyland. It's not Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory. It's the real world here. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work in our private lives.
And it doesn't work in Yahweh's kingdom, and it doesn't even work with government, that you can go to that point. We have a major problem, many major problems, as I'm saying, right now in the world, with famine, with all kinds of things that are coming. But in America, financially, this is going to be the hinge that it's just going to snowball all these other things throughout the world. And I believe start into, you know, the tribulation times and the wrath of Yahweh and all the other things that in the end, praise the Heavenly Father, it's going to bring His kingdom and the return of Yeshua to the earth. But there's a hard time we're going to go through before this. Just now, if you look at America unemployment rate, if you look at real unemployment, when you're looking at people that have exhausted their unemployment benefits, you're looking at people that are either not employable anymore at all or left the employment market or underemployed, the real unemployment rate in America is 16 to 23%. And that's coming from the government. That's not a number that I'm making up or just taking from some kind of wild internet site. So it's probably even higher than that. I just heard 2 days ago, they said up to 75% of all house mortgages in the United States are now what they call underwater, meaning the people owe more on the house than there's equity in the house. Up to 75%. Unbelievable. A lot. Which means the mortgage, you know, it's basically worthless. They're estimating that an additional 3 to 4 million people will lose their house in 2010. And this doesn't even include the commercial real estate bubble in America that's just ready to pop. And from most of the people I know in America, and especially in the business world, people are very scared to death of what's happening there and how oblivious the government seems to be and how irresponsible they are just tacking up and spending more money. Property taxes are being lowered due to the fall in prices, and local and state governments are having record deficits due to this and also lower income tax from the recession. California is the sixth largest economy in the world. Can you imagine that? That one state is the sixth largest economy of the world. And they're going under. They're completely going under. And they're going to need a government bailout. And unbelievable, it'll be record size. Where's the money going to come from? Where on earth is the money going to come from? So, what has changed since 1 year ago? When we were told a year ago that it was the worst financial crisis the world has ever seen. And now all of a sudden, a year later, when we hear, like I said, in the President's State of the Union address, everything is fine. Everything's good. Everything's been fixed. Good. Now spend more money. Everything is good. Is that really the situation that we're dealing with? So what has changed in 1 year? The federal government, through the Federal Reserve, has pumped $3 to $5 trillion into the economy. Money today means nothing. It's like candy. It means absolutely nothing. It's only numbers on paper, like I was reading here. There's no concept of what those numbers mean. So I want to take a couple minutes here and just go over. What do I mean by $1 trillion? Is there anybody that's ever really used that term in their life for anything? Go down to the store and get me $1 trillion nails. You know? We had $1 trillion people. What is that number? You know, we hear it all the time now. You know, growing up, I remember hearing million. Wow, a million. That guy, he's got $1 million. Whoa, he's got to be rich. And that seemed like the biggest number you can get in the world. And then all of a sudden, billion came up. Ooh, billion? What on earth is that? Now it's $1 trillion. And now it's thrown out, you know, but the deficit. The deficit that Obama just came up with, President Obama, for this current year is the largest on record. $1.6 trillion just in 1 year deficit. And that's not including, as I'll get in here in a minute, all the debt that's building up. But I want to show you this to show you how serious this is, because these numbers, thus we're hearing them, and they don't mean anything anymore. But let me show you this. If you had $365,000, a lot of money, right? $365,000. If you made of $1 bills and you had a single stack of $365,000, it would be 120 feet tall. 120 feet. That's pretty big. That's about 120 feet is, oh, maybe a 15-story skyscraper. That's $365,000. Now, if you had
$1 million. If you had $1 million placed on top of each other, it would basically be as high as the Empire State Building. That's a pretty high building. That used to be, just before the World Trade Center was built, the tallest building in the world. And that's about $1 million. $1 million. $9 million. If you had $9 million stacked on top of each other, it would amount to 3,000 feet high. Think of a 3,000 foot high mountain. That's a pretty high mountain. That's how high $9 million bills would be. How about $900 million? $900 million, that's a lot of money, right? $900 million would be 300,000 feet or 56.8 miles. So $900 million would be 56.8 miles if you went down. How about $87 billion? That was the amount of money that President Bush asked for additional for the Iraq War a couple of years ago. You know, they already had their budget. They already put all the money on it. We just need an extra $87 billion. That's it. You know, just $87 billion. Oh, yeah, okay, $87 billion. Because, like I said, these numbers, we don't even concept what any of it means anymore. $87 billion. $87 billion, if you stacked up single bills, would be 28,998,000 feet or 5,492 miles. It would be a round trip between Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, California, across the country. Can you imagine that? Now, that's good. $87 billion would be, if you stack the money from Washington to Los Angeles and back, would be $87 billion. 5,492 miles. That's $87 billion. Now, $166 billion? $166 billion? If you stack the bills in a single column, it would be 55,333,200 feet tall, or almost 10,500 miles. It would be 1.5 times the distance from Washington to Baghdad. That is $166 billion. So again, that's not even 1 year of the money we spend in that war. We spend more than $200 billion just in Iraq on the war. And $166 billion would be more than 10,500 miles. You could take all those dollars from Washington to Baghdad and halfway back. I mean, it's just unfathomable when you start to think of these numbers. Now, $315 billion. $315 billion. If you would have stacked the money in a single stack, it would be tall enough to wrap the moon at its equator almost 3 times. To wrap the whole moon around its equator 3 times at $315 billion. So, what is a trillion? You know, it's like you start getting into these things. Like I said, let's put it in real terms. Because like I said, we're throwing this around. Trillion, 5 trillion, 10 trillion, 20 trillion, 100 trillion. Like these numbers, they're not even real. They have no value to anything anymore. The state of Texas, we have a lot of brethren in Texas. The state of Texas is roughly 270,000 square miles. So 1 trillion square miles would equal 3.7 million Texas states. Can you imagine that? 1 trillion. So now we're looking at what a trillion is. Texas is 270,000 square miles. 1 trillion square miles would be 3.7 million states of Texas. You're starting to understand what a trillion really is. 1 trillion square miles is in fact about 20 Earths. The whole Earth, 20 times over, is 1 trillion square miles. If you travel around the world at the equator, so if you start at the equator, I was at the equator one time when we were in Kenya, and you traveled all around the world, it would take you 40 million times going around the world to equal a trillion miles. 40 million times. I mean, this is just 1 trillion. So you see the difference between a million to a billion and then a billion to a trillion is just
phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. $1 trillion, remember we kept saying if you laid it down, $1 million as high as the Empire State Building, all these things. $1 trillion laid end to end would stretch from the Earth to the Sun and back with a lot of miles to spare. Wow. So, you know, we think of a million, or a billion, or a trillion, but in our mind, we're really not concepting the difference in these things. $1 million, Empire State Building, $1 trillion to the Sun and back with miles to spare. So it's a major, major difference of a trillion. $1 trillion taped end to end would wrap around the Earth more than 3,800 times. And it says that's a ton of cash. Actually, 11 million tons it weighs. 11 million tons. $1 trillion. It would take more than 10,000 18-wheeler trucks to transport $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Think about it. How much money can you fit in your trunk of your car if you had to transport? Millions, right? You could fit $1 million in one suitcase. To transport $1 trillion, you need 10,000 18-wheeler trucks to transport that much money. You could spend $10 million a day, and it would take you 273 years to spend $1 trillion. $10 million a day! Who could spend $10 million a day, and it would take you 273 years to spend it? If you made a dollar every second, a dollar a second, which would be $60 an hour, or $3,600 a day. If you made that much money, a dollar a second, or $3,600 a day, you would make $1 million in 12 years. 12 years down the line, you'd have $1 million. In 32 years, you would have $1 billion. It would take you 31,000 years to get to $1 trillion. 12 years to $1 million, 32 years to $1 billion, 31,000 years to get to $1 trillion. You starting to see the difference of $1 million to $1 billion to off the roof to $1 trillion? It's not even comparable. Absolutely not even comparable. $1 trillion is so large a number that only politicians can use the term in conversation, because they really don't think about what they're saying. And it's written that mathematicians do not even use the term $1 trillion. Because it's not even conceivable. And like I said, just logically think to yourself, have you or anybody you've ever known ever functionally used that term, trillion, in anything? Can you really think of where you can use it? In a trillion man army? You know, a trillion jelly beans to count? There's a trillion miles to go? You can't. It's not even a real number, because there's nowhere that number can really be used. Last thing that shows you about $1 trillion is more stars than the entire Milky Way. So think of the Milky Way. It's like, that's something we can't even conceive how big it is, and it's all endless and all this stuff. And $1 trillion is more stars than are even in the Milky Way. So, now when you think of this term, and I hope you're really understanding what $1 trillion is now, it should be blowing your mind and say, well, we can't even concept what $1 trillion really is. The total debt of the United States, secured and unsecured, is between $125 to $130 trillion. Wow. The total debt of Babylon, United States today, is between $125 to $130 trillion. How on earth can that money ever be paid? How are these dollars worth anything at this point? And they're really not, which is the problem. It's really not. And it rises millions of dollars every second. You can go on the internet and you can check. They have the debt clock that they have in America. And you can sit there and you can watch it for an hour and see how much it goes up. But every second, because of just the interest that's owed on there, it's going up millions of dollars a second. And instead of paying it down, we're just adding more to it. It's almost like the guy who, like I said, he owes $1 million, he's got no money to pay, and what does he do?
goes out with his credit cards and just blows it. You know, it's almost like he loses his mind. He's just starting to think, yeah, let me get every last penny I can get out of this thing before I totally collapse. Rises millions of dollars every second, and that's just debt. That's just debt. And what is debt? Debt is simply buying what we cannot afford. The Bible definition of covetousness. So why take the time to go over all these things on Yahweh's Sabbath day? Because when you look at Babylon, there's so much being said about Babylon, and everybody's getting into this and getting into that. But can you imagine how on earth, when you look at just the debt, and Babylon being about covetousness, which we're going to talk about here, how could it be anybody else but America? Nobody, no country on earth is nowhere near this kind of debt. And all debt is covetousness. Because I know one thing. Even if I need a new jacket, if I can't afford one, I'm not going to go out and buy one on credit. And if I was living in Siberia and I had to get a jacket or I was going to freeze to death, I certainly wouldn't go out and spend $10,000 and get a jacket with all gold plates and all kinds of other things on it. I'd get something that's functional and practical to my life as cheap as possible. And that's exactly the opposite of what Babylon has done. It's the total, total opposite of what Babylon has done. Proverbs 22, verse 7, it says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to a man who lends. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to a man who lends. And remember, in Jeremiah 25, Babylon is given 70 years to rule over the nations. And Babylon is all about money. And what has Babylon done in those 70 years? They have lived good. They have lived real good, as we're going to see here. You know, we've been out of America since 1999. And I noticed in about the year 2003, 2004, when me and Petra would go back and visit, I noticed no matter where I went in America, every single state I went into, and it was from one coast to the other, everyone was doubling the sizes of their houses. And I talked to people, people I knew, some of them were even my relatives and friends. I said, but you got a 3,000 square foot house and you only have one child. Well, why would you want to double it? Oh, well, yeah, the neighbor did it. You know, if he does it, then I got to do it. Just this covetous spirit that went around there. And now it's time to pay the piper. Because I always say this. Psalm 24, the earth is Yahweh's, the fullness thereof, the people and those who dwell in it. Every single thing that we think we own, that we're possessing, because remember what Paul said in Corinthians 7, we possess but we don't own. We have something in our possession, but we don't own it. And Yahweh gives us something. You know, I have a vehicle now. For a long time, we never had a vehicle, being outside of America. One reason we couldn't afford it, another reason we didn't need it. But now I need a vehicle. So Yahweh blesses me with it. But tomorrow, if I don't need that vehicle anymore, it's his vehicle. I'd have to give it to somebody else or get rid of it. So that's what he does. He blesses us with things we need for his purpose. And what has Babylon done with those blessings? You know, Yahweh looks down from heaven and he says, okay, America, Babylon, you are going to be my banker. I'm going to put all of the wealth in you because we need to feed the poor in the world. We need to make sure that no covenant person is starving or going hungry or needs clothing. And most important than anything, this good news has to be preached in all the world as a witness before my son can return to the earth. And what has Babylon used with that wealth? But Babylon has used that wealth to live in luxury. They haven't used it. And I'm not going to say they haven't used it at all, because America was the country that brought Bibles all around the world, whether it's through the Gideon Society and other things. So I don't want to degrade. I believe American people have very good hearts. I believe they're good givers. But I believe overall, there's been a problem there that Satan used our human nature and our covetous spirit to get the people there. And now it's over. It's over. The debt is so unbelievable that I'm telling you what I don't know. I mean, right now, if you look, they can, like this past year, they just printed trillions. I told you what a trillion is. 1 trillion bills, you can go to the sun and back, and they printed several trillion of them. So you could do that for a while. You could throw this paper money into the society and try to hold it up. And I'm not here, I'm not a prophet, I'm not predicting that within a week, within a month. But I can tell you this much. As I read these things here today, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see, it can't continue that way. You just can't keep printing paper and think it's going to go on forever. And I believe that it's important at this point, as the people of Yahweh, that you need to start preparing to greatly reduce your standard of living. Because this thing can fall apart tomorrow, or it can fall apart in a year, or it can fall apart in 3 years. I don't know. I don't know how long it'll take before the people realize that they're just printing money and there's nothing to back it up, or that they stop using the dollar as a reserve currency. I don't know. I'm not in on these meetings with these international bankers and these other things. But I'm telling you, the handwriting is on the wall. It is definitely on the wall. The time is very short. Exodus 20 and verse 17. Exodus 20 and verse 17 says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male slave, or his slave girl's ass, or his ox, or his ass, or anything which belongs to your neighbor." And that's exactly what's been done here. That Satan has used this system of bartering, the system of trading, and you could read it in Ezekiel 28, that Satan, from the Garden of Eden, he has used the system of trading to produce his world government and his educational schools and his religions and all the other things he has in this world. But he's used it in an unlawful way, according to Yahweh. And we want to make sure that we're not living spirits of covetousness. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 9 says, "Or do you not know that unjust ones will not inherit the kingdom of Elohim? Do not be led astray. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor male prostitutes, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor covetous ones, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor plunderers shall inherit the kingdom of Yahweh." And some of you were these things, but you were washed, but you were sanctified, but you were justified in the name of our Messiah Yeshua and in the spirit of our Elohim. So, wow, the covetous person is put in the same scripture with the fornicator, the idolater, the adulterer, the male prostitute, homosexual, all in the same scripture here. And I don't think that, as a people, I don't think we really even understand what coveting is. And I've said this before, that if you have 50 sweaters, and the fact that you have money in your pocket and you can go and pay for one, it's still coveting because you don't need it. Coveting is desiring anything that you don't need. It's desiring something that either you can't have or something you don't need. And, you know, the scripture is very clear. If you have 2 sweaters and your brother has none, you give him one. So if we have 50 sweaters and we're going out and buying another one just because we have those green debt notes with dead dignitaries in our pocket, it doesn't make it right before Yahweh. And it's actually sin before Yahweh. Ephesians 5, verse 3, says, "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as become saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather of thanksgiving. For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Messiah Yahweh." So very, very clearly here, covetousness is called idolatry. Why? Because we covet, because we make ourselves into some kind of deity. And we build this world where we're the deity, and everything we want, we're going to buy, and we live in our kingdoms and our 5,000 square foot homes and all these things, while our neighbors and our brethren and everybody else is living in poverty. So it's important that we realize that it's covetousness is actually called idolatry. It's breaking the commandment, and it's called idolatry. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. It says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he who said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.'" Let your conversation be without covetousness. I know a lot of times, during the real estate boom, I used to turn my stomach to go back to the States, and everybody I talked to, all they want to talk about is how much their house is worth. "So, what's your IRA did this year? My 401k? My stocks are up 22% since January." Look what it says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness." Our conversation should be on uplifting, edifying, you know, supporting each other, holiness, praising Yahweh, glorifying His name.
But it shouldn't be built with covetousness, just building ourselves up and how many things we have. Jeremiah 51 and verse 13, you don't have to go there, but I'll just read it. It says, "Oh, you who live by many waters," talking about Babylon, "rich in treasures, your end is come, the measure of your covetousness." And you know something? They say the first part to recovery is admitting that there's a problem. And one of the biggest problems I've seen with Babylon is, at least in America, many people don't even want to admit it's Babylon. Almost anywhere else I went, it's so simple, you know. Who else is the number one military in the world, the number one economic steam engine, the world policeman, all these things. And yet in America, they're like, "Oh, no, it's not us. It's not us." You know, everything, Babylon is Dubai. You know, Dubai just went under. They went under. They went under as a country. People say it's Dubai. They'll say it's Iraq. You know, we read here about Babylon being around many freshwater seaports. Iraq doesn't have freshwater seaports. And certainly Iraq is not the world, you know, steam engine of the economy. I mean, Iraq is certainly not the number one military in the world. But the first thing we have to do is admit it. We have to admit and repent from what we've done as a nation. Let's go to Revelation 18. Revelation 18. Because you know something? It's bad enough when one covets and makes himself into an idol. But what's worse about it, what Babylon has done is, by Babylon hoarding the riches, they've made so many people live in misery in third world countries. So many people. Revelation 18 and verse 6, it says, "Give back to her Babylon as also she gave back to you, and double to her double according to her works, and the cup which she mixed to her double. By what things she glorified herself and luxuriated, by so much give back to her torment and mourning. Because she says in her heart, 'I sit as a queen, and I am not a widow, and I shall not see sorrow.' Because of this, in one day her plague shall come, death and mourning and famine, and she will be consumed with fire, for Adonai Yahweh judging her is strong. And the kings of the earth will weep for her and will wail over her, those having fornicated and having luxuriated with her, when they see the smoke of her burning, standing from afar because of the fear of her torment, saying, 'Woe, woe to that great city Babylon, the strong city, for in one hour your judgment has come.'" Well, who else has luxuriated, lived in luxury? Like I said, sometimes when we go to third world countries, and some of the brethren even will say, "Oh, I'd love to go to America, and it's so good over there." And I tell them, no, it's not. The immorality that's there and the other things, you know, just because there's many things, you know, even my mom would say to me, "Say what you want about America, but anything you want, you can have here." I said, that's exactly why I don't want to be there. Because I don't want my life to just have anything I want. You know, our life as believers is self-sacrifice. It's losing. It's pouring out ourselves every day. You know, coming under submission. Bringing every thought into captivity. It's not just going out and just living and taking anything I personally want. It's not about that. We drop down at verse 11, same chapter. It says, "And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her, because no one buys their merchandise anymore." Like I said, 70% of the world economy is the American buyer. You know, people talk about China and talk about this. China is exporting. China's not importing. You think Chinese are buying products? You think Europeans are buying? No, it's the Americans that are buying other people's products. And that's why the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over Babylon, because no one buys their merchandise anymore. If America was gone tomorrow, and whether that means completely gone, or let's just say economically, you know, over here in Israel, what I've been hearing over the last year is many of the vendors I know say, "Boy, the Americans aren't coming and we're hurting. The Americans aren't spending." Because it's the American consumer who has been the addict. That's the one that they've pushed to spend and spend and spend and spend and spend. No one buys their merchandise. "Never again will there be trading merchandise of gold and silver and precious stone and pearls, fine linen and purple." And it goes through 25 things here. 25 things that you can only trade on the commodity exchanges in America. Some of them you can trade in other places, but only all 25 can you trade and United States. Verse 15, the merchants of these things, the ones being enriched from her, from Babylon, will stand from afar because of the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning, and saying, woe, woe to the great city, having been clothed in purple and scarlet, and having been gilded with gold and precious stone and pearls. For in 1 hour such great wealth was desolated. And every ship pilot and all company on the ships and sailors, and as many as worked the sea, stood afar and cried out, seeing the smoke of her burning, saying, what other is like this great city? And they threw dust on their heads, and they cried, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe to the great city by which all those having ships in the sea were rich from her costliness, because in 1 hour she was ruined. You know, the only other place on earth besides Iraq that's named Babylon is the city of New York City. Babylon, New York. And as the ships come into the harbor through the Hudson Bay, that's the first port they see. They see the water tower that says, welcome to Babylon. And that's where all the commerce coming, trading, from Babylon. From Babylon. Book of James, the 5th chapter. Book of James, and we'll be done here in about 10 minutes. Book of James, or let's say, excuse me, Yaakov. Better than James, the book of Yaakov, or Jacob, chapter 5, starting in verse 1. It says, come now, rich ones, weep how over your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted. The rust of them will be a testimony against you, and it will eat your flesh. The treasures that you have heaped together shall be as fire to you for the latter days. This is not something that was for James' time. This is talking about the end time. Behold, the wages of the workmen who have reaped your fields cry out. You know, not forget that the American companies that are making billions of dollars. You know, you have a Gucci shirt, and look where the back where it says made in Philippines, made in Honduras, where people are making 10 cents an hour while they're selling these things for $100 and $150 a shirt or a pair of pants. Behold, the wages of the workmen who have reaped your fields cry out, being kept back by you. And the cries of the ones who have reaped have entered into the ears of the master of Sabaoth. You live luxuriously on the earth and live for self-pleasure. You nourished your bodies for the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous, and yet he does not resist you. Therefore, brothers, be patient until the coming of our master. Behold, the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient over it until it may receive the earth, the early and the latter rain. You also be patient, set your hearts firmly, because the coming of our master is drawn near. Do not murmur against one another, brothers, that you do not be condemned. Behold, the judge stands before the door. So, very clearly, Yahweh saying, just be patient. And you know, I've had the blessing in the last 10 years of going to a lot of third world countries where brethren are, and it just tears my heart. It tears my heart to see our sisters in Kenya that have their babies hanging on their back, and they're out there all day picking tea for 10 cents a barrel, you know, a basket. And maybe if they're working hard, they can do 2 baskets in a day. By miracle, maybe 3 and make 30 cents. You know, while the corporations, and like it says here, the rich ones that are getting the $1 billion in profits are taking advantage of the worker and not giving them their pay. So where does that leave us? Where does that leave us? As we see what's coming down, as this time is coming, let's go to Genesis 41. Because I believe there's a parallel here for us today. And there's a reason why Yahweh is warning us. There's a reason why I'm speaking to you today. There's a reason why the whole bottom hasn't fallen out yet. Because Yahweh will never do anything until he warns the people. And I believe that we have been warned, but I believe he's, in his mercy, he's giving us a little bit more time to get that stuff together. Genesis 41, starting in verse 25, and this is Pharaoh's dream, remember with Joseph. It says, and Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. Elohim has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows, they are 7 years, and the 7 good ears, they are 7 years. The dream is one. And the 7 thin and evil appearing cows going up after them, they are 7 years. And the 7 empty ears blasted by the east wind, Kadima, will be 7 years of famine. This is the word that I spoke to Pharaoh. What Elohim is about to do, he has made Pharaoh see. Behold, 7 years of great plenty are coming in all the land of Egypt, which I think those 7 years are gone, and 7 years of famine will rise after them, and all the plenty of the land of Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will consume the land. And the plenty of the land will not be remembered because of that famine afterwards, for it will be very severe. And as to the dream being repeated to Pharaoh twice, the thing is settled because it is from Elohim, and Elohim is hastening to do it. And it's something in the Bible they call twice speak. Whenever you see something repeated twice, it means it's a double fulfillment. One then, one now. And now let Pharaoh look for a man who is intelligent and wise and send him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh act and let him appoint rulers over the land and take a fifth of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of plenty. And let them gather all the food of these coming years and let them heap up grain under Pharaoh's hand as food in the cities and let them keep it. And let the food be for a store for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will be in the land of Egypt, and let not the land be cut off by famine. And the word was good in Pharaoh's eyes, and in the eyes of all his servants. And again, this is just my opinion, but I believe we are over the 7 years. So we are well far short in the game of going out and preparing for this. And I'm not talking about just storing up food and getting water filters and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about spiritually and mentally getting ready for what's coming right here ahead. That we have not been taking the time to spiritually getting ready for the days that are before us. And yeah, granted, we all look forward to the kingdom. We all look forward to Yeshua's return. We all look forward to reigning with him 1,000 years as kings and priests. But how many of us are preparing for that? How many of us are preparing for our kingship? How many of us are really living as ambassadors for Yahweh's kingdom every day? How many of us are preparing, believing that these days are right around the corner? Staying out of debt, downsizing our things, getting rid of our possessions, and mentally, every single day, reading our Bible, fasting, praying, with tears in our eyes, sighing and crying for the abominations going on in the earth. How does it affect us when we see the earthquake in Haiti, and we see millions of people, hundreds of thousands dead, people with loose families, children with no parents, more than 1 million people displaced, people living under plastic tents now, permanently? I mean, do we just, oh, that's terrible, let me go on in my life? Or does it hit us? Are we fervently praying, knowing some of these people are our very brethren? How is it? You know, we are already now in the second year of the seven-year cycle. Second year. We're coming in 2 more months. We'll be heading to the Aviv, the beginning of the year. And we'll be starting the 3rd year of the 7-year cycle. And if you read the story, you don't have time today. The first 2 years were bad. But they weren't so bad. Because if you remember, Jacob didn't send the children to go get food till the 3rd year. So it wasn't so bad. The beginning, basically, everybody's wealth was being exploited in the first 2 years of this famine in Joseph's time. Exactly what we've seen today. In the first 2 years of this 7-year cycle, basically any wealth that people have been taken away. They thought they had wealth in their houses. They thought they had wealth in their IRAs. They thought they had wealth here. And so many people, just everything has been depleted. But I'm telling you something. If we are in the last 7, and I don't know yet, but this year is going to be a pivotal year for that to know, because we're going to be heading into the 3rd year of the 7. It is going to get dramatically worse quickly. And I'm talking about financially, a collapse. I'm talking about famine, pestilence, wars, all these things that will be coming in the next 12 to 24 months. And even if it isn't, even if we're not in the last 7, there's a little more time left. Boy, the handwriting is on the wall. Because before the kingdom can come, remember, Babylon's got to fall. Medo-Persia, who is the Iranians and the Russians, will overtake as a world leader. And then the EU will come back from them, and then world government from there. And it all happened very, very quickly. So there's not, I don't believe there's a day to waste in mentally and spiritually getting ourselves prepared. You know, Proverbs 22 and verse 3, you don't have to turn there, I'll read it to you. It says, a prudent one sees the evil coming and hides himself, but the foolish go on and are punished. A prudent one sees the evil coming and hides himself, but the foolish go on and are punished. And you know, it's like it says in Peter, it's easy to say, ah, they've been talking about this for years, everything stays the same since our fathers fell asleep. But it's the prudent one before Yahweh, and it takes faith in Yahweh to believe that His word is true, to prepare for the days that we have ahead. We as a people are Laodiceans. We're prideful, we're selfish, we're self-righteous. We're so easily offended. It's one of the things I see in the days, you know, as we're getting closer to the end. Offenses will come, it's so easy offended. We need a change of heart before a change of land. And I have a tape that I did many years ago. I just redid it at the Bible school. We'll be putting it online in a few weeks. Called Change of Heart Before Change of Land. Because I don't believe just packing up and running out of America is the answer. I don't believe that. I do believe Scripture tells us there's a time where you've got to get out of there. But if you don't change inside first, you will never, number one, you'll never last outside of America anyway, and you'll have it 10 times worse. You've got to change from within before you could change from without. And like I've said before, 90% of the people that we've known over the last 12 years that have left the States, 90% have wound up back there. So just picking up and trying to save your flesh and running out of America, I don't believe is the answer. Let's go to Revelation 18. Revelation 18. Starting in verse 1, it says, "And after these things I saw another cherub coming down out of heaven, having great authority, and the earth was lighted up from his glory. And he cried in a strong great voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, it is fallen, and it has become a dwelling place of those possessed by demons, and a home of every foul spirit, and a home of every unclean bird, even the home of every unclean and hateful beast. Because of the wine of the anger of her fornication, which all the nations have drunk, even the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. And the merchants of the earth became rich from the power of her trade." Of course it's America. "And I heard another voice out of heaven saying, Leave the land of her, my people, that you may not share in her sins, and that you may not receive of her plagues. Because her sins joined together reach up to heaven." Well, maybe there's a trillion sins. Maybe that's like the trillion. "And Yahweh remembered her unjust deeds." So again, I'm not telling people not to get out of America. Because believe me, I think it's a cesspool of immorality there. What I'm saying is, what you need to focus on first is getting your spiritual lives together. That's the focus. Do not do something in panic, or you'll be 10 times worse than you were before. Get your spiritual life together. Joel 2, and maybe I'll read that. That'll be the last scripture I read. Joel, the second chapter. Because Joel, not a big book, just a few little chapters there, but all about the end time too. Look what it says in Joel 2. Joel, the second chapter. You know, blow a trumpet in Zion. You know, the end is coming, right? It's clearly end days. Joel 2:1. "Blow a ram's horn in Zion and shout an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all those living in the land tremble, for the day of Yahweh approaches. It is near." No doubt in the time frame. But look in verse 12. "Yet even now turn to me with all your heart, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with wailing, declares Yahweh. Yea, tear your heart and not your robes, and turn to Yahweh your Elohim. For he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness, and he pities concerning the evil. Who knows if he will turn that pity and leave a blessing behind, a food offering and a drink offering for Yahweh your Elohim. Blow a shofar in Zion, sanctify a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the people, sanctify the congregation, gather the elders, gather the children, and those who suck the breast. Let the bridegroom go out of his room, and the bride of her bridal chamber. Let the priests, the ministers of Yahweh, weep between the porch and the altar, and let them say, Have pity on your people, Yahweh, and do not give your inheritance to shame. For a proverb among those of the nations, why should they say among the people, Where is their Elohim?" So clearly, this is what Yahweh wants. And your leaders in Babylon certainly ain't giving you this. The leaders in Babylon, what are they doing? Babylon is money, it's trade. So even in religion, you know, you're not turning on this tape or downloading this video and spending $49.99, you're just doing it because this is what we do. Freely you receive, freely you give. But most of the preachers in Babylon are preaching a prosperity gospel. Everything will be okay, you know, just as long as, almost like the government. As long as you just keep spending and keep giving your tithes over to these corrupt preachers in congregations, then everything will be fine. And that's not what Yahweh says. That's not what Yahweh says, but Yahweh, what He wants is, He wants us to prepare. And you know, the book of Romans is all about faith. and talks about faithful Abraham. And man, when you really, really study about Abraham and think of the faith he had to have, that as he's ready to kill Isaac, and what does he say? He knew that Yahweh promised that that seed, that Isaac, would be the seed, you know, to go down into the Messiah and bring millions of offspring. And what does Abraham say? Well, if I kill him, Yahweh can raise him up. What faith that took, that he even believed in the resurrection in order for that to happen. And that's what we need in the end time. We need to have that faith in Yahweh. Not in the government, not in government programs, not in subsidies and surplus plans and all this other stuff. We need to trust in Yahweh. We need to trust in Yahweh to be our provider. We need to trust in Yahweh to lead us to where we're going. We need to trust in Yahweh because I'm telling you, this is going to be the worst time the world has ever known. And if you don't prepare in here, and you don't prepare in here, and you don't prepare by memorizing this book, you really risk not making it in the end time. It's serious. It's serious stuff. Time is moving quickly. I believe 2010, going into 2011, is going to be a pivotal point to the future. I really do. I think it's going to give us, we're at a crossroad here, and it's going to tell us, do we have a little more time, or are things speeding up? I really think it's going to be a pivotal time here, this next 12 to 18 months. Don't just go, and I'm talking about Yahweh's calendar, not necessarily the Roman one. Don't just go back to your life as business as usual. Remember Proverbs 22:3. A prudent one sees the evil coming, and he hides himself, he prepares. But the foolish go on and are punished. The world may not want to admit what is on the horizon, but Yahweh's elect can understand where we are in world events. Pray, fast, study daily, humble yourself to be corrected. Repent of your pride and self-seeking attitude, and most of all, ask Yahweh for direction in these perilous times ahead. So, it was my blessing to be able to share this with you today. I don't have so many opportunities, but through modern technology, we're able to do this. I just want to give one more reminder that if anybody is considering coming with us over here at Sukkot to come back to the Promised Land and see what Yahweh's doing in these end times, please sign up. We're filling up very quickly in our feast complex. And also, if you're thinking of coming to the Return to the Land program and you want to be part of that, it's going to be a different program than we've ever seen over here. And really, it's going to be a firsthand account of preparing to get ready for, like we said, for Yahweh's kingdom of what's coming in the future. And I welcome you to apply if you'd like to. But may Yahweh bless you and keep you. May He cause His face to shine on you. May His countenance lift you up. And may His shalom be upon you. Yahweh bless.